Chapter 39. No pausing for Ladywell, because she liked him, or for Nain, that she was influenced by him. They were both too near her level to be trusted to bear the shock of receiving her from her father's hands. But it was possible that though her genesis might tinge with vulgarity a commoner's household, susceptible of such depreciation, it might show as a picturesque contrast in the family circle of a peer. Hence it was just as well to go to the end of her logic, where reasons for tergiversation would be most pronounced. This thought of the Viscount, however, was a secret for her own breast alone. Nearly the whole of that night she sat weighing first the question itself of marrying Lord Mountclere, and, at other times, whether, for safety, she might marry him without previously revealing family particulars hitherto held necessary to be revealed a piece of conduct as he had once felt to be indefensible. The ingenious Ethelberta, much more prone than the majority of women to theorize on conduct, felt the need of some soothing defense of the actions involved in any ambiguous course before finally committing herself to it. She took down a well-known treatise on utilitarianism which S.E. had perused once before, and to which S.E. had given her adherence ere any instance had arisen wherein she might wish to take it as a guide. Here she desultorily searched for argument, and found it, but the application of her author's philosophy to the marriage question was an operation of her own, as unjustifiable as it was likely in the circumstances. The ultimate end, apostrophe she read, with reference to and for the sake, of which all other things are desirable whether we are considering our own good, or that of other people, is an existence exempt as far as possible from pain, and as rich as possible in enjoyments, both in point of quantity and quality. This being, according to the utilitarian opinion, the end of human action, is necessarily also the standard of morality. ... It was an open question, so far, whether her own happiness should or should not be preferred to that of others. But that her personal interests were not to be considered as paramount appeared further on. The happiness which forms the standard of what is right in conduct is not the agent's own happiness, but that of all concerned. As between his own happiness and that of others, utilitarianism requires him to be as strictly impartial as a disinterested and benevolent spectator. ... As to whose happiness was meant by that of other people, ... all concerned, ... and so on, her luminous moralist soon enlightened her. The occasions on which any person, except one in a thousand, has it in his power, to do this on an extended scale, in other words, to be a public benefactor, are but exceptional, and on these occasions alone is he called on to consider public utility. In every other case, private utility, the interest or happiness of some few persons, is all he has to attend to. ... And that these few persons should be those endeared to her by every domestic tie, no argument was needed to prove. That their happiness would be in proportion to her own well-doing, and power to remove their risks of indigence, required no proving either to her now. By a sorry, but unconscious misapplication of sound and wide reasoning did the active mind of Ethelberta thus find itself a solace. At about the midnight hour she felt more fortified on the expediency of marriage with Lord Mountclere than as he had done at all, since musing on it. In respect of the second query, whether or not, in that event, to conceal from Lord Mountclere the circumstances of her position till it should be too late for him to object to them, she found her conscience inconveniently in the way of her theory, and the oracle before her afforded no hint. ... Odd is a point for a casuist. ... She said. An old treatise on casuistry lay on the top shelf. She opened it more from curiosity than from guidance this time. It must be observed that a chapter bearing on her own problem, the Disciplina Arcani, or the Doctrine of Reserve. ... Here she read, that there were plenty of apparent instances of this in scripture, and that it was formed into a recognized system in the early church. With reference to direct acts of deception, it was argued that since there were confessedly cases where killing is no murder, might there not be cases where lying is no sin? It could not be right, or, indeed, anything but most absurd, to say in effect that no doubt circumstances would occur where every sound man would tell a lie, and would be a brute or a fool, if he did not, and to say at the same time, that it is quite indefensible in principle. Duty was the key to conduct then, and if in such cases duties appeared to clash they would be found, not to do so on examination. The lesser duty would yield to the greater, and therefore cease to be a duty. This author she found to be not so tolerable. He distracted her. She put him aside, and gave over reading, having decided on this second point, that she would, at any hazard, represent the truth to Lord Mountclere, before listening to another word from him. "Well, at last I have done," apostrophe she said, "and am ready for my role." Apostrophe, in looking back upon her past as she retired to rest, Ethelberta could almost doubt herself to be the identical woman with her who had entered on a romantic career a few short years ago. For that doubt S.E. had good reason. S.E. had begun as a poet of the satanic school in a sweetened form. She was ending as a pseudo-utilitarian. Was there ever such a transmutation effected before by the action of a hard environment? It was not without a qualm of regret that she discerned how the last infirmity of a noble mind had at length nearly departed from her. She wondered if her early notes had had the genuine ring in them, or whether a poet who could be thrust by realities to a distance beyond recognition as such was a true poet at all. Yet Ethelberta's gradient had been regular. Emotional poetry, light verse, romance as an object, romance as a means, thoughts of marriage as an aid to her pursuits, a vow to marry for the good of her family. In other words, from soft and playful romanticism to distorted Benthamism. Was the moral incline upward or down? 37. Nulcia, an ornamental villa, her energies collected, and fermented anew by the results of the vigil, Ethelberta left town for Nulcia, where she joined Piketty the same evening. Piketty produced a letter, which had been addressed to her sister at their London residence, but was not received by her there, Mrs. Chickerell having forwarded it to Nulcia the day before Ethelberta arrived in town. The crinkled writing, in character like the coastline of Tierra del Fuego, was becoming familiar by this time. While reading the note she informed Piketty, between a quick breath and a rustle of frills, that it was from Lord Mountclere, who wrote on the subject of calling to see her, suggesting a day in the following week. "Now, Piketty," apostrophe she continued, "we shall have to receive him, and make the most of him, for I have altered my plans, since I was last in Nulcia." Apostrophe apostrophe, altered them again? What are you going, to be now not a poor person after all? Apostrophe apostrophe, indeed not. And so I turn and turn. Can you imagine what Lord Mountclere is coming for? But don't say what you think. Before I reply to this letter we must go into new lodgings, to give them as our address. The first business tomorrow morning will be, to look for the gayest house we can find, and Captain Flower and this little cabin of his must be things we have never known." Apostrophe apostrophe, the next day after breakfast they accordingly sallied forth. Nulcia had recently begun to attract notice in the world. It had this year undergone visitation from a score of professional gentlemen and their wives, a minor canon, 3 marine painters, 7 young ladies with books in their hands, and 39 babies. Hence a few lodging houses, of a dash and pretentiousness far beyond the mark of the old cottages which formed the original substance of the village, had been erected to meet the wants of such as these. To a building of this class Ethelberta now bent her steps, and the crush of the season, having departed in the persons of 3/4 of the above-named visitors, who went away by a coach, a van, and a couple of wagonettes one morning. She found no difficulty in arranging for a red and yellow streaked villa, which was so bright and glowing that the sun seemed to be shining upon it even on a cloudy day, and the ruddiest native looked pale when standing by its walls. It was not without regret that she renounced the sailor's pretty cottage for this porticoed and balcony dwelling. But her lines were laid down clearly at last, and thither she removed forthwith. From this brand new house did Ethelberta pen the letter fixing the time at which she would be pleased to see Lord Mountclere. When the hour drew nigh, enormous force of will was required to keep her perturbation down. As he had not distinctly told Picotee of the object of the Viscount's visit, but Picotee guessed nearly enough. Ethelberta was upon the whole better pleased that the initiative had again come from him than if the first step in the new campaign had been her sending the explanatory letter, as intended and promised. As he had thought almost directly after the interview at Rouen, that to enlighten him, by writing a confession in cold blood, according to her first intention, would be little less awkward for her in the method of telling than in the facts to be told. So the last hair was arranged, and the last fold adjusted, and she sat down to await a new page of her history. Picotee sat with her, under orders to go into the next room, when Lord Mountclere should call, and Ethelberta determined to waste no time, directly he began to make advances, in clearing up the phenomena of her existence to him, to the end, that no fact which, in the event of his taking her to wife, could be used against her as an example of concealment, might remain unrelated. The collapse of his attachment under the test might, however, form the grand climax of such a play as this. The day was rather cold for the season, and Ethelberta sat by a fire, but the windows were open, and Picotee was amusing herself on the balcony outside. The hour struck. Ethelberta fancied she could hear the wheels of a carriage creeping up the steep ascent which led to the drive before the door. "Is it he?" " she said quickly. "No," said Picotee, whose indifference contrasted strangely with the restlessness of her who was usually the coolest. "It is a man shaking down apples in the garden over the wall." They lingered until some 3 or 4 minutes had gone by. "Surely that's a carriage?" said Ethelberta then. "I think it is," said Picotee outside, stretching her neck forward as far as she could. "No, it is the men on the beach dragging up their boats. They expect wind tonight." How wearisome. "Picotee, you may as well come inside. If he means to call, he will, but he ought to be here by this time." It was only once more, and that some time later, that she again said, "Listen." "That's not the noise of a carriage. It is the fizz of a rocket. The coastguardsmen are practicing the life apparatus today, to be ready for the autumn wrecks." Said Ethelberta, her face clearing up. Hers had not been a sweetheart's impatience, but her mood had intensified during these minutes of suspense to a harassing mistrust of her man-compelling power, which was, if that were possible, more gloomy than disappointed love. "I know now where he is. That operation with the cradle apparatus is very interesting, and he is stopping to see it. But I shall not wait indoors much longer, whatever he may be stopping to see. It is very unaccountable, and vexing, after moving into this new house too. We were much more comfortable in the old one. In keeping any previous appointment in which I have been concerned, he has been ridiculously early. Shall I run round?" said Picotee, "and if he is not watching them, we will go out." Said her sister. The time of Picotee's absence seemed an age. Ethelberta heard the roar of another rocket, and still Picotee did not return. "What can the girl be thinking of?" She mused. "What a half and half policy mine has been. thinking of marrying for position, and yet not making it my rigid plan to secure the man the first moment that he made his offer. So I lose the comfort of having a soul above worldliness, and my compensation for not having it likewise. Apostrophe apostrophe a minute or two more and in came Piketty. What has kept you so long, and how excited you look, apostrophe said Ethelberta. I thought I would stay a little while, as I had never seen a rocket apparatus, apostrophe said Piketty, faintly and strangely. But is he there? Apostrophe apostrophe asked her sister impatiently. Yes he was. He's gone now. Apostrophe Lord Mountclear? Apostrophe apostrophe no. There is no old man there at all. Mr. Julian was there. Apostrophe a little ah. Apostrophe apostrophe came from Ethelberta, like a note from a storm bird at night. She turned round and went into the back room. Is Mr. Julian going to call here? Apostrophe apostrophe she inquired, coming forward again. No, he's gone by the steamboat. He was only passing through on his way to Sandburn, where he is gone to settle a small business relating to his father's affairs. He was not in Nulcia 10 minutes, owing to something which detained him on the way. Apostrophe apostrophe, did he inquire for me? Apostrophe apostrophe, no. And only think, Ethelberta, such a remarkable thing has happened, though I nearly forgot to tell you. He says that coming along the road he was overtaken by a carriage, and when it had just passed him one of the horses shied, pushed the other down a slope, and overturned the carriage. One wheel came off and trundled to the bottom of the hill by itself. Christopher of course ran up, and helped out of the carriage an old gentleman. Now do you know what's likely? Apostrophe apostrophe, it was Lord Mountclear. I am glad that's the cause, apostrophe said Ethelberta involuntarily. I imagined you would suppose it to be Lord Mountclear. But Mr. Julian did not know the gentleman, and said nothing about who he might be. Apostrophe apostrophe, did he describe him? Apostrophe apostrophe, not much, just a little. Apostrophe apostrophe, well? Apostrophe apostrophe, he said he was a sly old dog apparently, to hear how he swore in whispers. This affair is what made Mr. Julian so late, that he had no time to call here. Lord Mountclear's ankle, if it was Lord Mountclear, was badly sprained. But the servants were not injured beyond a scratch on the coachman's face. Then they got another carriage, and drove at once back again. It must be he, or else why is he not come? It is a pity, too, that Mr. Julian was hindered by this, so that there was no opportunity for him to bide a bit in. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.